We sure love the Barbie doll in America, and in some cases love to hate it or her. Just about every girl in the country of a certain age owns a Barbie. But adults often roll their eyes at the impossible shape of Barbie's body or the emphasis on looks and fashion. Now there's a report on an experiment at Oregon State University that shows playing with Barbie may have negative effects on little girls' perceptions of their future career possibilities. Aurora Sherman is an associate professor in the School of Psychological Science at OSU in Corvallis. She and a research partner published an article on their experiment in a scholarly journal several weeks ago. Sherman, Aurora, thanks for joining us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
To make sure we give credit where it's due, who is your partner on this, Eileen Zurbriggen?
She is actually a friend from graduate school and now a highly valued colleague. She is a full professor at the University of Santa Cruz in California.
I did get a chance to read the entire article about the experiment here, and it's not mentioned there, but I got the feeling that the old Barbie with the pull cord that said math is hard must have been in the backdrop of somebody's minds to get started on this.
Yeah, that one didn't last very long.
Yeah, I noticed
there
that.
There was that huge outcry, and that one just got. I think sometimes versions of that Barbie pop up on eBay and are highly prized by some collectors. You know, when I started this project, which I think is sort of what your question is about, I wear a mom hat and I wear a science researcher hat, and I had heard about the furor of the Math is Hard Barbie, and a variety of other cultural writers either love Barbie or love to hate Barbie, as you mentioned in your introduction. And I thought, you know, I just need the data. And when I went to the literature, there really wasn't a whole lot of information from a scientific standpoint that could give me any information about whether the loving Barbie is a good idea or hating Barbie is a good idea. And so I really started out this project thinking, well, we do kind of need to know whether there is any kind of impact on girls' ideas or girls' thoughts about their place in the world. And when I started, people thought this was kind of a crazy idea and said, you know, it's just a doll. There's nothing that girls learn from that, or it's a neutral experience. And so I really started this whole series of studies, of which this is the first one, to evaluate whether that sort of neutral stance was accurate, or whether, in fact, as Mattel claims, Barbie is an excellent role model. I mean, that's also a possibility. She's been dressed for lots of occupations, and so it was also possible that the effect on girls' ideas about careers could have been positive. So that's really why I started this project, to say, show me the data. What can we learn when we actually run an experiment that controls other sources of influence and just look at an influence of different kinds of dolls?
And you mentioned that Mattel says, you know, Barbie's dressed in a bunch of different things. In fact, you did use there was a Dr. Barbie and a fashion Barbie in this experiment. Is that right?
I did, absolutely. And I was perhaps most surprised by the fact that our results were not different between the Dr. Barbie and the fashion Barbie. That was our way of evaluating in the experimental experience for girls the possibility that this professionally styled Barbie might actually give girls a boost in their ideas about careers. But in fact, for reasons which we don't understand just from these data, we can speculate, but we don't have a good idea about the mechanism of the effect that we saw in this study. But there wasn't any difference in the results between girls who played with a Dr. Barbie and those who played with just your sort of standard dressy fashion style Barbie.
So clothes do not make the woman. It's always Barbie.
It appears that way. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Aurora Sherman, were you surprised that were there any studies that involved Barbies or just very few?
When I started this project, there was one, and they used pictures of Barbie. They made a storybook and had kids read it. And one version of the book had pictures of that illustrated the story that used Barbie, and one version of the book had no pictures. And they found that girls exposed to the storybook version, where everything else was the same, but girls who saw the pictures of Barbie reported wanting to be thinner and some dissatisfaction with their physical shape and size. And girls who read the storybook without the pictures of Barbie did not have that decline or difference in their ideas about their own body. And I thought that was a fascinating place to start, but I wanted a more naturalistic session, you know, where kids actually play with a Barbie in a way that's similar to how they play with Barbie at home. So we invite kids into our lab, and we have a child-sized table set up with accessories and toys that go with Barbie or with Mrs. Potato Head, and clothes and things that they would actually do at home, you know, on the floor of their bedroom or the, you know, the playroom. So that it was a more, it reflects more of how they actually interact with the doll when they're at home.
All right. Much more about the two Barbies and Mrs. Potato Head and her involvement in this entire experiment. Aurora Sherman is an associate professor in the School of Psychological Science at Oregon State University in Corvallis. Did this with Eileen Zurbriggen from a California university. We will talk more with Aurora Sherman and take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about Barbie and careers in a minute and a half. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Aurora Sherman, an associate professor in the School of Psychological Science at Oregon State University in Corvallis. She and Eileen Zurbriggen from the University of California, Santa Cruz, did an experiment with little girls and Barbie dolls, and then asked the girls after a period of play with some Barbie dolls and some with Mrs. Potato Head instead about career options. And the Barbie doll group appeared to have somewhat more limited view of what their career options would be as grown-up girls. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the study and its effects. And the phone numbers are 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Aurora, just to step back a little bit to get to a more general setup of the scene here, there is an American Psychological Association task force on sexualization of girls, and is that part of what prompted this particular experiment?
It is actually part of what prompted this whole series of studies. My co-author, Dr. Zurbriggen, was actually the chair of that task force, and as a good friend, I picked up that report when she and her amazingly dedicated colleagues were finished with it, and I read through it, and I was kind of rude to her accidentally. I called her up, and I said, Eileen, that says here in this section that there isn't any experimental research on dolls and whether potentially sexualized messages from dolls are being communicated to girls. You know, you must have missed something, right? I mean, there has to be something in the literature. And she said, you do realize that we just spent 2 years combing all of the literature on this topic, right? We didn't miss anything. It's really not there. And I said, well, somebody should run that study. And she said, well, sure, somebody should run that study. How about you? How about we run that study? And I said, well, okay, sure. Right, let's take it on. Let's do that. So it is a response to a broad concern from educators and parents and researchers that childhood for girls is getting incredibly sexualized in ways that are kind of confoundingly confusing to me. There have been a variety of products on the market, a pole dancing kit for girls, Playboy bedding for very young girls in twin sizes are just, you know, a couple of examples. And I'm interested in this series of studies in thinking about products in general that are sexualized, but what are the products that most kids are exposed to, those kind of grabber images of the pole dancing kit for girls or the Playboy wedding? I think those are actually sort of flash in the pan and short-lived kinds of experiences. I think people get rightly riled up about that, and those are usually taken off the market. But dolls are here to stay in a variety of ways. Girls have played with dolls for hundreds of years, but the look of dolls has changed drastically in the last 20 years or so. Barbie was certainly the first, but another upcoming study in my lab also looks at the Bratz dolls, which are a very even more highly sexualized line of dolls in both physical appearance of the doll itself and the costuming. So So we definitely moved from the call for research from that task force report on sexualization of girls to both this study that was just published and then several upcoming studies in my lab.
Is the United States ahead of, and I don't know if ahead is definitely the term you want to use here, but I mean, is the United States outdistancing the rest of the world in sexualization at such a young age?
That would be a hard question for me to answer with any accuracy. There aren't good data cross-culturally, but I don't think that we're necessarily different in the U.S. compared to Britain or Australia or other developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have good actual data on that. We haven't had a good study that would show us cultural markers of sexualization in childhood around the world. But I can say that Barbie is about as popular around the world as she is in the United States. So Barbie herself is a very cross-cultural and international phenomenon.
And we've mentioned a couple of times now that not a lot of information out there about studies, well, not a lot of studies done, apparently, involving Barbie. Is that partly because of concerns about who owns Barbie's trademark and all that sort of thing? I mean, did you get calls from Mattel's legal department at any point along the way?
No, I haven't. I do kind of wonder if I will. I don't know what their policies are on using Barbies for research, but I just bought several Barbies off of Amazon, just like anybody can do. And I'm not selling it. I think the trademark stuff is if I actually profited off of an illegal use of their product, and I am relatively certain, I haven't checked with my legal department, maybe I should, but I'm relatively certain that scientific investigation is a separate kind of category of potential trademark infringement. I think really what it probably more likely boils down to is that we just haven't in the psychological community thought very deeply about the potential impact on cognitions or behaviors of things that seem relatively benign to us. I mean, as said a few minutes ago, I think we have an idea that toys are not very important as maybe socializing influences or things that kids learn through play with dolls has not really been on people's radar screens. And I think one of the important things about this study is that it allows us to say this is actually a potentially important area of childhood experience to research more carefully. We had some interest in the 70s. Some feminist researchers and feminist writers were talking about the heavy influence of baby dolls on girls and drew a distinction between the fact that we give baby dolls to girls and not to boys, and there are a variety of reasons why we still do that. But since then, we haven't really thought about dolls or really a whole much about toys in general in terms of what the unintended consequences or unintended messages might be. I'm not in any way claiming that someone who gives a child a Barbie doll is purposely being malicious. That's not at all what I think is happening. But I think my study allows us to take a step backward and say there could potentially be messages or consequences that we didn't take into account when we just picked up the doll of whatever type at the store, and that we can take a look at that and get some good data about what those consequences might be so that parents and grandparents and whomever might have just a little more information to use when they're making buying decisions.
I was a little surprised at the ubiquity of Barbie dolls. Now, granted, my kids are both boys, but was it 99% of American girls between 3 and 10 have a Barbie doll?
That's the estimation, and if you look at the sales figures from Mattel, that's got to be that most girls actually have more than one Barbie doll. Their sales figures are phenomenal. They did take a hit with the introduction of Bratz, and then there was a whole lawsuit over the potential proprietary information for the Bratz company. But Barbie is incredibly popular, and she continues to be incredibly popular.
We're talking to Dr. Aurora Sherman at Oregon State University, the School of Psychological Science. She and partner Eileen Zurbriggen put together a study about the effects of Barbie dolls and little girls and their career options identified by themselves after a period of play with Barbie dolls. You can join us as we discuss the experiment and its results. Our phone number is on the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. How carefully, then, Aurora, did you have to construct the experiment? I mean, for age group, for the amount of time of play, all that sort of stuff.
Right. Experiments always have to be constructed very, very carefully, because the whole point of an experiment is to hold any potential impact on the outcome that you're measuring. You want to hold everything constant. When I teach my research method students, I say you want to have your experiment take place in a box, and you want to make sure that your box is so carefully constructed that the only explanation for the results that you got is something that you did with the variable that you were interested in. So we were interested to see whether there would be a difference in girls' answers depending on whether they played with a Mrs. Potato Head doll or one of our Barbie dolls. So we started with the age range of girls for which Mrs. Potato Head and Barbie are both marketed, and that is roughly between the ages of 4 and 7 or 3 and 7. Our 3-year-olds, we discovered, were not very happy to sit and answer questions about jobs, and so we actually had to exclude our 3-year-olds. They were so sweet and so wonderful, and they loved to play with the dolls, but they just did not want to sit and answer questions, which I can totally understand, right? I mean, when you're 3, you have other things on your mind. So most of these girls ranged from 4 to 7, and we chose that, again, particularly because that's the age range that are sort of deemed as suitable for these kinds of toys. And we brought them into a carefully designed lab space, and parents could watch their kids through a one-way mirror. On occasion, we had one or two girls who were very curious about this mirror in the room. They asked us about it, and we couldn't tell them what was happening until after. But then, after girls were curious, we let them go in the other room and look through the one-way mirror at where they had just been. They enjoyed that quite a bit. And then we had to be really careful about how we asked all these questions. Right? It would be easy to, you know, sort of ask leading questions. Right? What do you really think about this kind of job? So we standardized all the questions. We used 10 jobs. 5 of them were female-dominated and 5 of them were male-dominated. And we didn't just make that up. We went to census data to make sure we were getting very clear distinctions between the type of jobs that we asked about, based on real data that exists, you know, in the world about how many women do that kind of job and how many men do that kind of job. So we really did set up this experiment to be very, very careful. Girls did not know there were other kinds of dolls available. They only knew about the doll that they got assigned to. So we did everything we could to make sure.
That seems like an important note there. So the ones who had Mrs. Potato Head were not aware that there were Barbie dolls available to the other girls?
That's correct. These were all tested one at a time, and nobody knew. We told parents at the very beginning that their child would be assigned to one of 3 different dolls. So the parents knew ahead of time that there were these possibilities, but there wasn't time for them to discuss that with the children. And so girls just understood that they went into another room after they themselves gave permission to participate in the study. They just went in another room, and there was a doll set up there for them to play. So, no, they didn't know that there were other options.
All right. So Mrs. Potato Head for one set, and then was it two Barbie sets then? We had the
right.
Fashion Barbie and the Dr. Barbie.
That's correct.
All right. And so what's the basic finding here then? What's the meat of what you discovered?
The meat of what we found is that when girls played with Mrs. Potato Head, they told us that they believed in the future they could do about the same number of jobs that they thought a boy could also do. They did not make a distinction in their cognitions about careers that were different for themselves versus what they thought was possible for boys. But the girls who played with either of the Barbies told us that they thought boys could do about 25% more jobs in the future than they themselves could do, suggesting that something about playing with Barbie creates a potential limitation in girls' ideas about the number of jobs they could do compared to the number of jobs they think boys could do.
But there's really no way of knowing, is there? I don't know if your questions cover this, but whether they thought the same things coming into the room as they did after playing with Barbie.
Oh, that's such a good question. That is taken care of by a procedure called random assignment. When you use random assignment to condition, you are able to create groups that are exactly the same at the start. We didn't want to ask them about careers at the beginning because we didn't want to bias their answers. This was a relatively short study because the girls are fairly young. We don't want to keep them for a 45 or 60-minute study. So we didn't want to ask them about careers at the beginning. We only wanted to ask them about careers after their exposure to one of the doll conditions. But because we used random assignment, we know that the groups were equal in all variables that girls would come into a study with. So we know that at the beginning, for example, some girls wanted to be a firefighter and some girls wanted to stay at home and some girls maybe even wanted to be on the radio. But those desires at the beginning, as well as lots of other potentially important variables, were evenly distributed across all three conditions. So you're right to say that we didn't actively measure whether there was a difference from beginning to end. That would be a pretest, post-test kind of design. But we did ensure through our assignment procedures that the groups that we compared were equal at the beginning. And if they were equal at the beginning but different at the end, that's our experimental paradigm working.
Dr. Aurora Sherman, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's Morgan State University. We're talking about her experiment with Barbie dolls and career choices. The not a huge number of girls. Was it 37 in the final total sample?
It was 37 in the final total, absolutely.
Can you really pull that much of an extrapolation from a group that's this small?
That is also such a good question. We can say that the experiment worked. There are two kinds of concerns about a small sample size. One is whether you actually had the statistical power to detect a difference between groups that was actually there. And for that concern, we appear to be just fine because we were able to detect that statistically significant difference. But you're talking about the second concern about a small sample size, which is very crucial. There's no reason to think that the girls in my study were drastically different from other girls in Corvallis or even other girls probably around Oregon. However, I would not be comfortable generalizing these results to just every child in the world, every girl in the world. There are differences in education. There are differences in exposure to role models about careers. There are differences that are cultural. So that's why it's really important to me to continue this research program and follow up in the future with more studies, because the more data we have, the more likely it is that we can then say something about extrapolation or generalizability. But that is one of the limitations of this study that I am actually most concerned about. I would not want to have these results definitely say I represent all girls. I mean, my girls were normal girls. They didn't have two heads or, you know, anything like that. But it is a small group of kids, and generalizability is definitely an issue.
All right. That answers the question, I think, that I had put down here about you'd probably get very different results in inner city Chicago or in Corvallis, or maybe not. You just don't know.
We just don't know. And that's why the replication of studies is such an important value in scientific research.
I'm curious to know if the same person asked all the questions of all the girls or if it was different people, but they were basically sticking to a script in either case, right?
Yes, it was different people. I had a team of incredibly competent and dedicated Oregon State undergraduate and graduate researchers. So it was different people. They were trained vigorously, and there were booster sessions and refresher sessions. The concern about having different people ask, over this data collection time is that different people can introduce some potential error into the measurement of, of the information that we're trying to gather. Since we still found significantly different results. I'm not terribly worried about that problem, but it is something that I would like to try to do better in my future studies.
All right, much more to talk about with Aurora Sherman about Barbie dolls and girls' career perceptions. We'll come back to the Jefferson Exchange and take some of the phone calls we have waiting and invite you to join us as well. Back with Dr. Aurora Sherman and you on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Dr. Aurora Sherman. She is a member of the faculty at the School of Psychological Science at Oregon State University. And she and University of California Santa Cruz colleague Eileen Zurbriggen put together an experiment in Corvallis in which girls were given Barbie dolls or Mrs. Potato Head to play with. And the Barbie doll girls, no matter which of two iterations, Dr. Barbie or Fashion Barbie, the girls who played with Barbies were more likely to indicate that they thought boys would do have certain career options open to them more than girls. It's a small study, but some interesting findings here, obviously. You can talk to Dr. Sherman here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Aurora, I don't want to mess up those numbers. The 25% figure you indicated before, is that the number of girls who indicated that they thought boys were more capable of certain careers?
No, that's the percent of more jobs they said boys could do compared to themselves. So in actual numbers, it was about they said boys could do about 8 jobs out of the 10 that we asked them about, and they thought they could do about 5.5.
Given the age of these girls, none of them older than 7, is that right?
Right.
How much perception do we even know that they have about careers and what people do at work?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. They have lots of perceptions, and most of them are not accurate. right? I mean, you ask any 5 or 6 or 7 year old what they want to be when they grow up, and they say, I want to be a firefighter, ballerina, teacher, or geologist, which, you know, is fantastic, but they're going to have to choose eventually. So the point is not that we got accurate data about what they will really do in the future. That wasn't actually the point of the study. The point of the study was actually a smaller kind of question. What do girls think now? And what girls think now is important, but it's certainly not the only thing that will influence their whole life path. It is important and viable question to say, what are the influences on girls' ideas about careers now? But we should not mistake that for being the entire answer about every choice about careers or non-careers that they take, in the future. So it's a very important question to ask, but the point of the study was not to be able to predict from Barbie doll use right now what their whole career path would be in the future. It was just, again, to ask the question whether playing with Barbie has an impact on just their thoughts right now. And their thoughts could still be, their thoughts are certainly still malleable and open to a variety of influences, and will certainly change over time.
There's certainly a wealth of background information in the first couple of pages of the article. We mentioned that it sets up the fact that there is an American Psychological Association task force on sexualization of girls. It gives some figures about some self-images, one of which is about one of these numbers from another study or survey, I guess, about the careers that teenage girls want. I'm not sure which range of ages here, but that, I don't know, somewhere north of 30% said they wanted to be models.
Right. I found that to be a fascinating study. There is a growing cultural concern that girls are having extremely unrealistic ideas about very appearance-focused jobs. There has been a concern for quite a while that girls are not going into the STEM fields, the science, technology, engineering, and math fields. And so there have been a variety of interventions to try to get girls to, for example, stay taking math classes longer in high school and see role models in those scientific and math-oriented kinds of fields. But at the same time, people are also starting to notice that in addition to dropping out of math classes early, in addition to not seeing themselves in science and technical fields, girls also seem to be gravitating, again, at least in some formulating times, maybe not their entire whole accurate career plan, but especially around adolescence, that they seem to be gravitating toward very, very appearance-focused fields like modeling and acting, fields for which the number of girls who seem to be interested in them could not possibly actually all be hired, right? I mean, the number of girls who will actually be successful models is extremely tiny, but a lot of them seem to feel this is a very, A, lucrative, and B, realistically possible kind of career path for them. That concerns me, and I think it concerns a variety of professionals, first because it's not a very accurately attainable goal, but secondly because if you just think that your whole life path is going to be determined simply by how you look, then you are not preparing yourself for what your life path is probably more likely to include, which is still going to need to be able to balance the checkbook and, figure out the medication to give your kids if you have a kid, and, you know, a lot of intellectual things that are way more important than just how you look. I'm not saying that appearance does not matter at all. I'm just saying if girls are highly convinced in outrageously large numbers that they're going to be fashion models, number one, very, very few of them are actually going to be fashion models. But if all of them believe that they are, they may be locking themselves out of educational, volunteer, and professional experiences that will put them really far behind the starting gate in comparison to other peers, especially other male peers.
Aurora Sherman's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from the Psychology Department, the School of Psychological Science at Oregon State University, the co-author with Eileen Zurbriggen of this experiment about Barbie dolls and girls' career looks. Let's take some calls. Here is Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Were these children all of approximately the same socioeconomic group and ethnicity?
Yes, they were.
And how did you round them up, Aurora? I didn't get that part.
I advertised in local shops and libraries. I sent letters home to the local public schools and a couple of private preschools.
All right. That was a short question with a short answer, Mark. Do you have a follow-up?
No, that covers it for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's go to Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Aurora Sherman.
Did you say me?
I did.
Oh, no, you said Jeannie. Thank God I never had a Barbie doll as a kid. I had a doll with blonde hair and a doll with black hair. Because that was reality. I lived in the projects. Mm-hmm. They were called Veronica and Betty from Archie comic series.
Mm-hmm. And they were actual dolls or you just read the comics?
No, that's the only two dolls I had. One had blonde hair and one had black hair.
Uh-huh.
Know what I'm saying? And my 50 years past living in the ghetto with kids, they only had the blonde, blue-eyed, one-inch waist, 36D, and they would look at it. The kids with brown eyes and black hair and darker skin, and they would, like, look at it like an idol, and I'd be like, oh, my God. Let's learn how to sew clothes for that and not focus on, oh, and then Barbie Mattel finally got smart and made a token doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did start making darker Barbies of these. Thanks for the story, Jeannie. Do we know at which point Mattel began to make Barbies in several races?
Oh, I don't know when that was.
Mm-hmm. All right, but point taken anyway. Thanks for that, Jeannie. Email from Deb in Talent. She asks, does this mean that nature is the winner in nature versus nurture? Is it possible that the answers were temporary based on the subject's last experience playing with dolls?
Those are good questions. I'll address the nature versus nurture one first. Just to be clear, this study doesn't purport to find a winner between nature versus nurture. In fact, most developmental psychologists recognize that all of childhood development is the product of both nature and nurture. But this was a study that looked at the socialized impact of playing with dolls rather than a nature-type biological kind of impact. So I don't think there's ever going to be a clear winner versus in nature versus nurture, but this was a study about nurture rather than nature. And then, I'm so sorry, Jeff, would you remind me what the second question was?
She writes, is it possible that the answers were temporary based on the subject's last experience, which was playing with the dolls?
Certainly. I think lots of answers in scientific studies are temporary, and I would love to do a follow-up study that could look at how long-lasting this potential impact is. On the other hand, girls naturalistically, as we discussed earlier in the show, something like 99% of girls in the U.S. and a great proportion of girls around the world do have a Barbie doll. So their world is very heavily influenced, at least for a few years, by seeing Barbie probably every day. And we don't know what that prolonged impact is, but it certainly, in just sort of a logical sense, it certainly would not be any less than the impact of the short period of play that we saw in my study.
You went in with four different hypotheses, and based on what you thought you might find going in and what you did find, were there any particular surprises for you, any real eye-openers there?
I did think that it would have been possible that the career Barbie might boost girls' ideas about careers that were open to them in the future or number of those careers. I would like to do a study with more children to be able to tease out those potential differences between a professional Barbie and the fashion Barbie. But one thing that I noticed after the fact, which I had not realized at the beginning, I just went to Amazon and bought a pediatrician Barbie, a doctor Barbie, and then a regular Barbie, and I just took them as they came to me, again, because I had this goal to make the play that children had as naturalistic as possible. But after the fact, when we had the data in and Dr. Zubergen and I were trying to understand what we had just observed, is that the Dr. Barbie is actually not very professional. She comes with jeans that have pink glitter woven into them. She has a fairly low-cut scrub-style shirt. She still has some potential markers of sexuality. So we think that costuming actually might be more important than we were able to demonstrate in this study. And we're thinking in the future about a study that would show Barbie or another kind of fashion doll in a truly professional kind of outfit, real scrubs with a face mask or things that would really remove all the potential sexualizing or appearance-focused aspects of Barbie compared to one that is more standard fashion doll style. So we still have, lots of things to think about.
Let's take another call. Here's Helga in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Aurora Sherman.
Hi. Being that I have a playhouse for kids and have watched kids play and have a doll camp and pay real close attention to the doll world, I think you should be careful saying that Barbie is very popular because you're avoiding the market pressure. There's a book called The Real Toy Story about how Mattel has monopolized the toy industry. So when you go into a store and you go into the toy section, the girls' section is Barbie pink and nothing but Barbies. Mm. You are very hard-pressed to find any other more natural-looking doll that looks like a girl instead of like a...
So it's Barbie or nothing, is what
harlot.
You're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You are so incredibly right about that. And I know that both as a parent and as a researcher, I'm trying to... I am running another study right now that requires a doll to compare that has no sexualized features. That is a natural-looking girl doll. And it was incredibly difficult to find. You are absolutely incredibly right about that.
You did mention, I thought, earlier on, some of the accessories that would allow the girls to play with the dolls. Were they allowed, for example, to change Barbie's clothes? Could they change from the Barbie scrubs, even with the pink jeans, into something else? Or could they change the fashion Barbie into a Dr. Barbie?
That's a great question. For this study, no. For a second study that I'm running, we provide 5 different kinds of outfits for the doll that they play with, so they can. And we are actually interested in what, for example, what outfit they choose first, whether they mix and match the outfits, whether they stick with, you know, with sort of things that match, whether they choose appearance-focused kind of outfits like the ball gown that we have, or it's sort of an active kind of outfit, like we have sweats and a hoodie. So those are really good questions that we're following up in our lab right now.
And I'm curious to know, you mentioned the Bratz dolls that in some cases are even more highly sexualized than Barbie. What sorts of experiments are you doing with those?
That study is in data collection right now, and it uses the doll that I just referenced, the one that has no sexualizing characteristics, and it draws on a concern in the college adult women literature that shows that adult women exposed to sexualizing cues show lower academic performance on a math test that you give them. So you bring young women in, and you ask them to complete a math test while wearing a swimsuit or wearing a sweatshirt. Women in the swimsuit condition, again, using random assignment so that they were equal in their math skills at the beginning, show a deficit in their math performance compared to women who wore the sweatshirt. And we're using an analogous kind of scenario in this study to look at girls' academic performance.
Well, you have indeed stayed busy. Aurora Sherman is an associate professor at Oregon State University at the School of Psychological Science. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
You're so welcome.
It's good to have you. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it'll be our first Friday of the month arts segment. We will hear about events coming up in arts around the region. At 8:30, we'll meet the director and producer of Running From Crazy, Barbara Koppel, here in town for the Ashland Independent Film Festival. At 9 o'clock, we'll talk to Paul Martin about his book about villains, scoundrels, and rogues. Some names you know, some you don't. That's all tomorrow on The Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.